Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com. Now,
this is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Hey, short and sweet, we're not. We're here for the long haul. 3 hours. What up, H-Town? Let's do this.
Whoa.
It's Nick, it's myself, and we've got 3 hours to get through a whole lot of stuff today. Not the least of which is... Nick, go into your little drawer, get your little sticker book out, okay? Take your little gold stars and start putting them all over the calendar on last night's game, okay? Because last night's game might be the watermark for the rest of the season where we turn the corner and we say, bullpen looked great. Big comeback win against a team that you needed to win against. Like I said, they mean double. It's a division game. That's the team closest to you. And the fact that most times when they get down four or more, the door is shut, it's over with. Unbelievable victory for the Astros in so many ways, and I'm hoping this is one we look back on and go, this is when it all came together.
Look, I mean, if it's any team that's capable of coming back from being down, particularly what they were high, they were down as many as 4 runs, it's going to be the Astros. If there's one team that can do that, it's the Astros, but it just doesn't happen that often, so it's nice to see that considering their bullpen issues. And... it looks like Crane has given Click the permission.
I like it.
To go over the threshold come trade deadline. So looks like there's a possibility that they can address the voids that you've been talking about, Joel.
James Click on if they're going to go over the luxury tax threshold, how much would they? Quote, if we're going to go over, we're going to go way over. I love that. It's music to my ears. It's absolutely what I wanted to hear, and it's what every Astros fan should want to hear, too, because this is the kind of move they've made basically every year that they've made a run. Verlander, Grinke, this is the time, because everybody that is quietly in baseball, not in the media, is talking about the fact that it started with the Astros and White Sox series, where all the scouts were saying, this is a preview of the American League Championship Series. Now, the bar has been raised even more because of the way they dominated the White Sox and the way that they're playing since then and their offensive lineup and the fact that we continue to harp on the fact there aren't any holes with the exception of the bullpen. A lot of teams have multiple different areas they've got to try and improve to where everybody's saying they're now the favorites to win the American League. The Yankees have fallen off. That helps you.
Oh, for sure. The A's, they just got to take care of this series. The Yankees falling off is great. I love the fact that they're absolutely struggling. They're just not a good team this year. They're not. I don't know what they're going to have to do, but they're going to have to do a lot if they want to make the adjustments. But the Astros do indeed get the win 9-6 over the A's last night, and it was a fantastic comeback win. Fromber struggled a little bit in the first and second inning, but was able to get through the third and fourth before that fifth inning popped off, and the Astros really started getting going. So congrats. I mean, it's great. It's great, and particularly because it's Oakland. And the American League, and they're in the division. And that's exactly what you're looking for if you're a Houston Astros fan. And the Jim Crane news could not be better. Now, hopefully, they stick to their word. I didn't see I just saw that they're willing to go above threshold. I didn't know that if they are going to go over threshold, that it's going to be as high as you just mentioned. So that's even better. But that's in the event that they actually break the threshold. I don't know if that's going to happen. I expect it to happen. If you want this team to be a World Series team, you're going to have to do something.
Well, and so early indications that are out there, including Buster only reporting, the Cubs, now losers of like 12 straight, they keep losing and they're just doing a free fall. They could be massive sellers. If they are, Craig Kimbrel, their closer, is going to be high on their list of priorities to get out of town. The two teams that they're saying are going to be the front runners for Kimbrel services, the A's and your Astros.
Okay.
It brings you questions in terms of what do they have to give up? The early indication was Brian Abreu. No.
I don't think they'll take that deal.
Two other prospects, including their top, their third-rated prospect in the farm system. And yet, the other thing, the other question, when I start going on the list of questions, what do you got to give up? If I'm only giving up Abreu off the major league roster, I'm fine with it.
Bye.
Look at the track record of, now, in the Arizona deal, Beer is the one guy that you have to look at and say, he may end up being something pretty good. But so far, even in the Greinke deal, nothing that's earth-shattering that you go, I never should have made that deal. The Verlander deal, we talked about it when they played the Tigers. Daz Cameron's there. But so far, he's not Vladdy Jr. He's not wowing anybody saying this guy's going to be a stud. The other kid at catcher and the prospects that they gave up, you make that deal again and again and again. If nothing else, it encourages you to make another deal just like it, because prospects are just that. They're hit or miss. They can work out. Look at Francis Martez. Look at a guy that was their number one pitching prospect less than 5 years ago. They just completely let him out there for any team to take a crack at. Everyone passed. They put him back on the Skeeters roster. But that's how quickly it can change. Derek Fisher, and go right up and down the list of all the guys that were the top position player or the top pitcher, and how many of them pan out as big-time major leaguers. So you make the moves. Another question I would have is, if it's Kimbrel, who's your closer? Because Presley has been lights out. He's an all-star. He has done nothing to, say, give it back up and go back to being a setup guy. If you want to do split closers, I'm open to it. But I'm thinking more along the lines of what you and I were thinking about earlier, which is a couple of arms, very inexpensive but very good and effective under very good contracts, would be more beneficial and probably not have to give up as much as a big-name contracted guy like Kimbrel.
In terms of the Presley situation, I mean, do you really feel like that, you know, if they do add Kimbrel and you do a split closer type deal, does that really hurt Presley's rhythm? Is that your concern, is him being hurt in terms of his rhythm in the event that they sign someone like a Kimbrel or get someone like a Kimbrel? Because I think Presley will be okay regardless of what they ask for him. As long as you keep the pitch count to a certain number, I think he'll be fine.
I'm not worried about him still being effective. Although he did have to adjust from being the setup guy in high leverage situations to being a closer. Not that he struggled mightily or anything like that, but it was an adjustment. What I'm saying is that as effective as he has been, it's kind of like with the Rachel Nichols situation when we talked about it. If someone comes after your job and it's in your contract to do that job and they suddenly take that job away from you and you haven't done anything that you felt like is warranted to give up that job, you're going to fight for it. If Presley's your closer this year and he's an all-star in doing so, and suddenly you make a trade and go, hey, Rye, appreciate what you've been able to do. We're going to move you back to the eighth now so that Kimbrel can be our closer. I kind of would have a problem with that.
He might have a problem with it if he feels comfortable in that spot, but I don't know. I mean, I haven't really heard from Presley in that regard. But look, if it's a seamless transition, if he feels like it could be a seamless transition, fine. But you did make a good point. When he went from the setup guy to being the closer, it wasn't seamless at all,
right?
But it wasn't the most seamless transition altogether. So look, the good news is they're willing to go over the threshold. Hopefully they actually mean it and they get someone to. Now, they're going to have to give up something.
Yeah.
I mean, the names that you talked about are just not going to be enough, especially if they're in discussion with teams that actually have a legitimate chance to complete a deal with
the
Houston Astros.
So the names Buster only threw out there besides Abreu were the number three prospect in the farm system and two other top 30 prospects, four total players for Kimbrel.
Okay.
I think that's a little steep. And Charlie and I were talking about it because I was curious about Kimbrel's contract. But regardless, unless it was long-term, and even still, he's on the downside a little bit. I don't want him for long-term for big money. That I think that, especially if it's getting ready to expire sooner rather than later, I don't think you have to give up that much. And if you do, I think there are other teams out there that are interested in at least some of those players and not getting all of them that could maybe give you a chance to fortify your bullpen with two arms for way less than the price of the one in the case of Kimbrel. Don't have to give up as much and put you in a same type situation, because now Presley doesn't have to move. He just keeps keeping on doing what he's doing. And you're in a good spot.
Yeah, and that I don't know. Like, I don't know where Presley's thought process is on that. But if he's feeling good and you're approaching the postseason, I actually wouldn't be incredibly upset if he didn't want to move from that. But I don't know how comfortable he feels with a change. I mean, he might be completely okay with the change, but I don't know yet. So, but I'm with you. I at least it's more exciting. I mean, there's a lot of good things in Houston, right? The Astros are getting the win. The XFL looks like they're going to come back in 2023.
Who cares?
The UFC is going to come back to Houston pretty soon.
That's big. That's good. That's August, right?
Yeah, I think they're going to have two, maybe even three. They have a deal with the Toyota Toyota Center. Yeah. So that's a really big deal. But yeah. I mean, and look, we can expand on that Rachel Nichols story, because obviously that...
And there's more.
There's more that came out now on Woj this time. It just looks like there's a bunch of infighting, which I hate to say it. I kind of enjoy the infighting.
The same
going
way
up
the listeners
mothership.
Love it when we all fight.
That's
here.
What I'm saying. Yeah. So it's, you know, go ahead.
So we've got plenty to talk about, including the game itself last night and the massive comeback, the bullpen, and the fact that I tweeted at, maybe their blinkers on and they finally turned a corner tonight and they looked good because they did what they did their job in the bullpen, and that was big because that game was huge in terms of establishing and just putting the A's back there saying, you are going to be second place. If they can go into the All-Star break, winning, like we said, 2 out of 3 in this series, do the same thing to the Yankees, you could be sitting in a really dominant position for the second half of the season in the division, let alone fighting for the best record in the American League. So you send a message. Last night sent a pretty clear message to a team that's been trying to play catch-up in that this team ain't going away. And maybe before they would have folded up their tents in a game like last night, instead, they came out hard-charging. And once they got the lead, they didn't relinquish it. And that's, as an Astros fan, exactly what you want to see. So that's super encouraging for a team, like we said, that now is being talked about as the favorite to win the American League. And let's not forget, Nick, here's a point that gets lost in the shuffle, because we're watching the Dodgers situation with Bauer. Some Astros fans actually chuckling because of the fact that they want to see bad on a guy who's been very vocal. But here's the bigger issue. It's much like the Deshaun situation. When you look at Bauer, they're saying he's not coming back when his leave of absence is over. If it's like the Deshaun situation, I don't know how he can come back until they have a clear-cut answer as to where this situation stands and also how many other situations could be out there. Because once you find one, like we saw with Deshaun, all of a sudden they were lining up. And if that's going to be the case, then baseball has to get ahead of it like the NFL hasn't done yet. They already did it once by giving him a leave of absence, but they also have to be smart enough to realize until we get all of this sorted out, he can't come back, and that's a big advantage to the team that was the favorite to win it all.
Yeah, I mean, it could be very, very telling for Trevor Bauer's career as well, but, you know, hopefully, a part of the reason why I feel like the number went so high against Deshaun Watson was because he obviously had a thing for massages, whether he was for self-gratification or not, or he just loves massages. We can all agree that he had an excessive number of massage therapists. If Bauer has an excessive number of women that he's messed with, particularly in the way that the details in the report said, yeah, I can see more women come out the woodwork. Maybe there's two or three women in the past that just want to jump on whatever they could in terms of monetary gain. But look, he has to be literally talking to several women. See, the thing is, what Deshaun Watson did is, he interacted with several women. So basically anybody can come out and say, well, he did this to me. But in Trevor Bauer's case, we don't know if he has a situation where he's just talking to like 10, 15, 20, 30 women all the damn time.
But here's the wrinkle on the flip side. Unlike Deshaun's.
Yes, we don't know yet.
Right, but unlike Deshaun's, where all of them are civil.
Correct. His could go criminal, and I've talked about that.
Yeah, the fact that his could go criminal and that the police have been contacted, they are actively investigating. They are saying that there's a lot to this that they're looking at.
They say it's worse than it really looks, is what they said.
That's why that could be the wrinkle that Deshaun doesn't have that could make this even more painful for the Dodgers in the fact that, and for Bauer, in the fact that this ain't going away anytime soon, and if it's not, he can't play until it does.
I'd argue Trevor Bauer is probably stressing out a whole lot more than Deshaun Watson.
I think you're probably right.
I think it's safe to say that now, unless, you know, the trial or the process or the case progresses a little bit more and it starts to look like his attorney is saying, you know what, we look good in this situation. I think you'll be fine and you'll be able to play baseball again. Right now, it doesn't look like that for Trevor Bauer. For Deshaun, it's just a matter of when. I think we can all expect Deshaun Watson to play football at some point. It's just a matter of when. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But we'll see.
But we're looking like it might be a year from now. And again, the NFL has got to step in. They have to take – the NFL has to take notes from what baseball already did and say, hey, look at the backlash the Dodgers are getting because they didn't act quick enough and they were going to pitch him. Well, the NFL, with camp coming up around the corner – as we talked about yesterday again, and we've talked about several times, they need to grab the bull by the horns before this gets really messy and Deshaun shows up for camp. or the Texans panic about telling him not to show up and having to pay him, and they need to say, you are on the suspended list, and they got to do it sooner rather than later because it would help to clear up some of the minutiae that everybody's sitting on waiting for. So lots to talk about on lots of fronts. That's just the opener. Think about what we got now for the next almost 3 hours to talk about. A lot, and that involves you. 713-780-3776, HR and P listener line. Call or text that number. Otherwise, hit us up on Twitch. Hit us on Twitter, where it's at the producer Nick, at Pac-Man Joel with a K. Together, we're the Press Box. This is ESPN.
This is Ed Too Tall Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Yordan hits one high and deep to center field. Yordan Alvarez, two-run home run! Yordan, high fly ball, deep left field, ball game tied! The big man hits a three-run home run!
Well, you know what he did, you know who did it, and you know how great it was. Because, boy, Nick, you know what? And a monkey wrench, first of all, in my schedule. I start getting texts at about 4:30. Hey, are you watching this golf match? I'm like, no. It's not supposed to be on until, 7:30, 8 o'clock tonight. Oh, no! The match started at, 4:30, went all the way to almost 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
So I had to record it. I was very disappointed that I did not get the first couple of holes. But then I ended up flipping between that, the Astros, and, of course, the finals. And then, after the first inning, I'm like, well, I'll contemplate whether I turn this thing off or not. I'm going to give the Astros a chance to bat and see if they can't start whittling away. Boom, home run. Okay, I'm back in. Then, all of a sudden, Framber keeps frambering. Not Fromber. He was Framber last night when he's not good. Fromber when he's on his game. Framber, in the first couple innings, kept coughing up runs. And I thought, well, a lot of people on Twitter were with me. They were contemplating turning it off for the evening.
Well, he did good in the third and the fourth. It was just the first two innings that really... And look, all it takes is one inning to really put your team in a hole. But it was just the first two innings. Third and fourth, he got away with it pretty cleanly. And then the fifth inning popped off pretty well for the Houston Astros. And we were talking about sending messages. I hope Yordan continues to send messages. I think that's his second multi-home run game of his career. I think his confidence is growing each and every day. I think his swing is getting better each and every game. And I think there's a lot of fear when Alvarez is at the plate. And look, their pitcher had a bad game, you know? Bassett didn't have the best game on the planet.
And he's a good pitcher.
And he's a really good pitcher. But he was facing some of the best bats in the game.
I love that lineup.
So it's okay.
And if you think about the fact that when Bregman comes back, that lineup, especially now that Straw is hitting, that lineup, aside from Maldonado, is a murderer's row that no one wants any part of. The fact that they just send a message to not just the A's, but the whole league. We ain't out of it. No matter how far we get down early, we're not out of it because we have that many bats. You talk about the guys hitting at or above 300. You talk about the guys with their OPS. You talk about the average. You talk about everything, the way they all blend together. Let's just make sure they stay healthy because I'm riding with this team, as I told you. The fact that now we've heard that Click is interested in improving a bullpen, which is their only weakness, only leads you to believe the shut up and watch tour could really get good at the end of this year because they're telling the whole league and all the fan base around the country, just shut up and watch because we can play baseball.
Yeah, that's how confident. And look, this is all without Alex Bregman. And I don't think it's a situation where he disrupts any type of momentum or anything like that. Sure, there's probably going to be some rust considering the long layoff.
But they'd love to have him back.
But they need him back. They need him back. And look, Bassett was on record. He said he struggled with location. Not a good team to struggle with location is the Astros. That's just not a good team. And look, every pitcher, including him, who's a good pitcher, will struggle with location sometimes. You'll have a bad game where that really impacts your performance. But you can't really have that against the Astros because they will make you pay, and that's exactly what happened.
Well, and then when you look at, on top of that, the fact that when you called the number of the bullpen because you knew Framber was getting taxed, he threw a lot of pitches, he was lucky to get out of there without a decision, but the fact that when they tied it again in the fifth and he got through five, you're like, he doesn't have much more left. He went to Abreu, and I started tweeting, oh my God, I'm gonna talk to the man above. I'm going to hold my breath. I'm going to take baby steps and hope this thing goes well. And not only one inning, but two innings later, I saw a guy that had better location. But whether it was his stint on the IL, and while he had a chance to rehab whatever was hurt besides his feelings, someone got into his head and got the ability to kind of have him redirect and think how he approaches hitters. He looked good. But then Stanek comes in. That's the old Ryan Stanek. Almost 100 miles an hour, pounding the strike zone, getting out. Presley comes in, slams the door. That's your 7, 8, 9 inning that you want that they used to have. They start doing that on a consistent basis. Now I'm less worried about a pen, too, just like when I was concerned about center field until we saw McCormick fill the gap until Straw picked it up. When you look at everything that you're talking about now, it's essential that Dusty doesn't give anybody any nights off the rest of until we get to the All-Star break.
But how do you know he's going to do that?
I don't. But I'm just saying, you've given enough guys their days off. But Uncle Mike is a professional hitter, and he makes such a big difference when he comes up in those spots with runners in scoring position. And just like Yuli, you know, more times than not, especially with less than two outs, he's going to deliver. And that just gives you an added advantage again. Bassett doesn't see lineups like this night in, night out. And he even said as much. When you face a lineup like the Astros, it's a different animal. So that's why they got to put the pedal down for the rest of this Oakland series. Win one more of the next two, and Manaea's a good pitcher, but they've had some success against him. But Garcia and Manaea tonight, you win the series by winning it, but that's all you needed to really come out of it by sending a clear message to Oakland that not only are we not going anywhere, we're extending the lead. And then hammer the Yankees.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be. Wait, isn't that this Friday?
Yeah, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Yeah, that's right.
And then they go to the break. So that's what everybody needs to say right now is there's plenty of time to rest during the All-Star break, but let's go 100 miles an hour right now. While they're down, let's put them out. Let's send a message that makes them feel helpless, like we ain't catching this squad.
Maybe Dusty, like he himself is tired, and he's like, man, I feel tired, so they must be tired. Let me just sit these guys down.
No, he looks tired. We don't need any more of that. We're done with that.
Look, it's possible that he does and he doesn't. I mean, maybe what you're saying, it, you know, plays to what he's been trying to do all along. Get that rest out early, get the load management done early. And then as we approach the All-Star break, maybe not so much load management. I don't know if that's the case, just knowing his MO, but we'll see.
Here's the other beauty of the situation, Nick. We're talking about Bregman. I think that it would be totally different. He was out in the outfield throwing. Didn't look like he was favoring the leg. Looked like he was in a good spot.
He looked pretty mobile.
Yeah. I would think that if this team was scuffling, if this team was the Yankees right now, there would be a lot of extra pressure to put Bregman out on the field. The fact that they're winning, they're lengthening their lead, they're dominating, that gives you more of a pad to say, Bregs, we don't need you to not only after the break, but only when you're 100%, because we got enough right now all across the board.
But it's harder for
stepping up.
Right, but it's harder for a guy like when they're doing well, it's harder for them to stay out of the game.
Absolutely.
He's going to be excited. Like if they were sucking, like if they're on a 10 or 12 game losing streak or whatever the Cubs are on right now, I could see him not wanting to rush back. But now that they're doing so well, the bats are doing well. Even now they have come from behind wins when Framber doesn't show up at the beginning. I mean,
I don't think you got to think big picture, right? You got to think long haul, not short term. Short term, I get it from a player, an individual player perspective. That's what you're right. That's what Bregman's thinking, right? But I think the general manager and the manager goes, we got bigger fish to fry. We're thinking about a title here. The most important thing is the second half of the season and that playoff push, we need you 100%. So I know it's difficult for you now, but think about how much better it's going to be for everyone going forward. Because if you come back, you're less than 100% and you push it, and think about if you're favoring the other leg. How many times do we see Kevin Durant, the latest example, when a guy is favoring one injury by putting more extra stress on the other leg, something else happens? You don't want that right now.
No, no. And it's going to be easy for the front office and the coaches to say, look, man, because they're the ones that are doing well without Alex Bregman. They're going to be very patient. Alex, on the other hand, is just going to be super impatient about everything and is probably going to want. And this is just my assumption because I feel like that's the competitor in Alex that just like, you know, that's the competitor in a lot of players that don't want to be injured and on the sideline. So I think it's a good news day. I mean, it's not that it's been terrible for the Houston Astros. It's been a very positive news week from everything from the lineup to pitching to the fact that Crane,
I think
based on
biggest,
what we've heard,
biggest news
that
of the
he's
day.
Willing to break the threshold. Yeah. So
when we hear from Click, he mentions the fact he has the, you know, that he would have the backing of the owner. That's exactly that's all I need. That's the news of the day. That's what everyone needed to hear. Because remember now, Nick, when we started this whole process of Astros baseball, we said this is the team that the city desperately needs. The Astros are the team that has to do something because otherwise we're in sports team hell. The Texans with the Deshaun Watson situation and the fact that they're not going anywhere anytime soon. The Rockets with a 17-win season and trading all that they traded away knowing they're in a rebuild. This was the team that we didn't know we were going to get, but we sorely needed, that we've got now. And now it's all about riding this thing out and doing everything possible to let them have every opportunity to win.
Absolutely. NBA Finals Game 1 officially in the books and some more ESPN drama.
Oh, boy. Let's get to all of that. We're only a half hour in. 2.5 to go. Lots more of the show. That means you guys as well. 713-780-3776. HRNP Lister line for calls and texts. Otherwise, Twitch and Twitter. Nick and Joel, Press Box, ESPN.
ESPN 97.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Paul will dribble it out. First finals game in 28 years, and the Suns give their fans a magnificent performance.
Well, so much to uncover now from a basketball perspective. Some of you can press the pause button because you guys don't like it when we talk basketball. Well, it's that time of the year where we talk basketball. I had lots of thoughts, Nick, and some of them it's going to be like it's a shame, but this is why you know that I have such disdain for the coaching staff of the Milwaukee Bucks. That's going to come up. But the first thing that has to come up is I cannot believe that Giannis played.
Me too. Shocked.
Then I watched him play, and every time, way before the block, in the first quarter, I watched him change directions. I watched him spin. I watched him jump. I never saw him wince. I didn't see him favor the leg, and I thought, that's crazy to me.
Impressive. I tweeted out, I'm like, Giannis is playing. You better hope he has an impact. Now, look, they lost, but he still put 20 points up coming back from that horrendous-ass injury. You got to give the guy credit. Obviously, the adjustments still may be an issue defensively, and I know you're going to talk about that. But from just a pure toughness aspect, I saw a little bit of a new side from Giannis
no
in terms
question.
Of his toughness.
Then, post-game, to say he never felt any pain.
Crazy.
It felt great.
I was shocked to hear that.
Now, I do have questions about how forthcoming he was with the coaching staff about that. Because one of the things that we talked about yesterday that I certainly think came into play during that game last night was they had to game plan for the Suns for game one, especially with a quick turnaround from the end of their series, as opposed to the Suns who were sitting and waiting. They had to game plan like he wasn't going to play, which meant the role players were all going to be to elevated roles.
Right.
They were going to have to do more,
right,
do other things. All of a sudden, and it wasn't decided until an hour or so before game time when he went out for an extended workout before the doors opened in Phoenix, and they decided he's good enough to go. Now, the Connaughtons of the world, now the backups and the bench players of the world, the Bobby Portises, well, am I not going to play as much because I'm not going to start? Well, you know, is Forbes going to be a guy that's going to get more shots or less time on the floor? Now, all these guys are like looking in the mirror going, well, what does that do for me? Because this isn't what we talked about. And I think that affected them to some degree.
Agreed. I think that's true. I mean, you have to prepare for all scenarios. But if you had a good idea that Giannis was playing, that should have been relayed to somebody. That should have been communicated. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine the trainers and the coaches were smart enough to do that. In regards to Giannis's pain, that's exactly what he said in the post game. He said he didn't feel any pain at all.
I felt great. You know, obviously I'm trying not to make it about me, but I felt great. You know, the medical staff cleared me to play. You know, out there I had my balance. felt my knee was stable, did not feel pain, so I felt good.
That's amazing.
Every time I look at that replay, not that I'm just at home, just hitting rewind and play every time, but every time that I've seen it, whether it was on Twitter, or I'm like, there's no way this guy's playing.
Bro,
there's
they said they could hear him 25 rows up. He yelled when that happened.
The thing is, it wasn't like an exaggeration. Like, even Giannis will do the whole, oh my God, that hurts so much. And then he lays on the floor and he holds his knee or leg or arm or eye and tries to sell it a little bit more. Every superstar does mm-hmm. that. But that was genuine pain. I mean, he fell to the floor because it was obvious. I mean, when his leg bent backwards right behind Clint Capella's leg, it looked disgusting. But good for him. And look, I don't know if he got lucky and the pain just wasn't that bad, despite how bad it looked on the replay. Still give him credit for being a little bit more tougher than he's shown in the past. And I think that's really important for Giannis going forward and this team, especially if they're serious about winning a championship and getting back to the finals.
Maybe you missed it, Nick. He said, no pain. I felt great. That sounds more Russian. I got to work on my Giannis. And it's a little higher,
he's Greek, but he's Nigerian too. So,
And then the night and day of it. So he was effective getting points around the basket early on when I was watching how he was going to be, right? He had got to double figures. But the dunk where he came in from the left side look like he had a lot of elevation, but he's tall enough with a long enough wingspan. He dunked it. So I'm like, okay, he's probably a little bit limited. Then you see the block in the second half and the ground that he covered and then the elevation to get to it. And you're like, oh, wait a minute now. This dude has to be feeling pretty good.
He does. Now, unfortunately for the Bucks, they still ran into Chris Paul and Devin Booker. Chris Paul had an amazing third quarter, 6 for 7. I think he hit all three of his three-pointers in that particular quarter as well. That third quarter, he was just absolutely on fire. And that's what it was. It was the first three quarters where they outscored the Bucks. The fourth quarter, they didn't, but by that time, it was too late. Chris Paul played like an absolute maniac, and it was great to see. And if there's any Rockets fans out there that are upset, like you've talked about, that you've seen on Twitter, and I've seen it too, those guys are idiots. I'm sorry. If you're mad about Chris Paul winning right now, and it's only just one game, guys, but if you're mad that Chris Paul made it to the finals and has won a game, and you're a Rockets fan and you're just mad because of that whole Harden-Paul situation, get over yourself, dude. Chris Paul he deserves to be there. They're the best team in the West.
He got screwed here. That's what people don't want to admit. He got screwed here by Daryl and James. He didn't ask for it. He wanted to be here. He thought this was the formula to get him where he is right now, but only he thought he was going to do it with Houston. And then he became the scapegoat and the ultimate guy that they were going to blame. And that's why, no matter how much, and there were times in his career I hated him. I hated him when he was with the Clippers because we were playing against him, because I was sitting there courtside calling games, hearing him talk smack. Yes, I've seen the flailing. Yes, I know he can be dirty, but no, I don't hold that against him long term. And then when I heard from everybody that worked with him here in Houston what a great dude he was, how he went out of his way to take care of people, how he didn't ask for any of this and was trying to do less so that James could do more for the benefit of the team. And then Daryl lied to him and said, you're not going anywhere, and then traded him, and they blamed him. And James did that stupid-ass press conference when he said, I know exactly what we have to do. Well, guess what? Now the Beard's ass is on the couch watching a guy 3 wins from a title, and he could get one before either one of the two guys that shoved him out of town. How could you not be happy for that
guy?
Now,
someone posed this question to me, and so I'll pose it to you. How much of the NBA Finals do you think that James Harden is actually watching?
Well, Nick, you've been to a strip club, and I don't know you don't normally go. But I'm just saying, at strip clubs, they have games on, too. It's also, guys want to watch sports when they're not watching strippers. So I would think, at least kind of intermittently between dances.
You think he, reserved a special corner in a strip club in Brooklyn and said, hey, I need 2 flat screen TVs, I need your best VIP girls, and I just want to be in this corner, block it off, make sure nobody messes with me. The only 2 things I want to see is girls and Chris Paul losing. That's the only 2 things I want. So how much is it going to cost to reserve this little area?
I think I jersey. Want a bottle. He's going to say, my jersey hangs in the rafters here. I get the flat screen, the corner booth, and the 2 chicks.
How do you know they're giving him that same treatment in Brooklyn like they have in Houston with the whole jersey?
Because it wasn't his fault. He got hurt. So as much as he blamed Chris for getting hurt in Houston, he's the hero that everyone in Brooklyn needs, because if he didn't get hurt, they'd be competing for a championship in their minds, and they got pretty far this first year, and they know there's more to come. So therefore, they're not going to turn their back on him. They're going to still embrace him for the time being. So therefore, the strippers will embrace him too.
So it looks like Suns 4, Dario Saric.
Yep.
It's official. It's an ACL tear.
Oh, no.
So that hurts the Suns quite a bit because of his role with that team. I think. And honestly, when I saw him limp off the court, I knew
thought it was an ankle.
No, it looked like a knee to me.
Well, I'm just the way he was walking. He was walking back to the locker room, and it seemed like, and I know he was fronting a little bit. He waited until actually got through the tunnel, and then all of a sudden he grabbed both guys and needed help getting to the locker room.
Yeah.
But the way he was walking initially, I was like, oh, that was probably a sprain. But the fact that, God, that's crushing. Not just, I get it for the Suns for the finals, but for him personally, that sucks.
That's got to suck. Game one into the finals, boom, torn ACL. That's got to be depressing. And that was just tweeted out by Shams Charania about 5 minutes ago. Giannis Antetokounmpo is playing and starting. No, that was from yesterday. I would imagine he's playing again today, right? I would imagine they're going to announce the start, him playing again today. I don't see why he wouldn't. He scored 20 points. He said he wasn't in any pain, and I would imagine he wants to play.
Oh, he's good. I mean, barring another someone hitting it, I think he's in. He has to be in for the rest of the series now because he's clearly stated he hasn't felt pain, and he played the way he played. And they need him because now they're down in the series. I think he's in now. He's all in. He has to be.
He has. It's the finals.
Right.
I mean, he's probably. How does he know that this team? He has to be honest with himself. How does he know that this team is going to make it to the finals next year, dude? There's a massive possibility that they don't.
No, I said. You know what I said when it was the conference championship games. I didn't think that any of the four teams would be in the conference championship a year from now. And therefore, they have to be in complete go-for-it mode. You got all summer to rest. Here's the thing. If he landed or, you know, say on the block, if he landed and then kind of limped up the court, kind of the Joel Embiid thing, where Joel Embiid, when he was making baskets, looked real fluid, and then all of a sudden he'd miss and something would happen, and suddenly he's limping all over the place, I'm not going to take that chance because that's my franchise in a small market where guys aren't going to just all be knocking on my door and saying, I want to play for the Bucks.
Right.
I would treat this totally different. The way he looked, moved, and then how he spoke about how he felt, he's got to play.
He does. I don't see why he doesn't. I mean, unless something pops off with the injury that we don't know about, I doubt he's practicing, right? In a situation like this,
I would think not.
Keeping warm and stretching and treatment, right? That's the only thing you can do if you're honest.
He said he lifted during the last couple of days while he was rehabbing this. Really? Lifting on a knee that did that?
Lift, but how do you know he was doing legs? I mean, do you?
Because they asked him in the press conference all the things he had to go through from a rehab perspective to get the knee right, and he said, you know, my lifting, and you know, lots of stretch.
I mean, some of these players got to get that in. I mean,
he's a fiend for the weight room, but still, wouldn't you say pad the brakes? Let's not do any legs for a while.
What if it does? What if it hurts him though? What if his routine workout is what keeps him?
Maybe it got it
keeps his wind up under him when he plays.
Maybe it got it tighter. Maybe it tightened up the knee area because you're getting blood flow in there and you're actually pushing whatever your leg press or whatever. So I don't know. All right, we got to talk about one other thing at least on this game last night before we get any further, and that is the clear-cut stupidity of the Milwaukee Bucks coaching staff. And whether they win it all or not, I still would make a coaching change now, Nick, based on what I saw last night. Because this is just – you talk about the Clippers running a rerun through the playoffs of every series, lose two, lose two, lose two. I'm telling you, this is a rerun that cannot be rerun next year for the Milwaukee Bucks, win or lose, and it has to be addressed. We'll talk about that next and a whole lot more. This is the Press Box ESPN.
Yeah, know when the whistle goes.
Real fun.
Sports.
ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
All right, rolling through the first hour of the program. Started out heavy on baseball with the Astros after the great comeback win last night, getting into some of these NBA Finals opinions, and the one that I have, Nick, is the one that I have to express because you know I'm a junkie, a basketball junkie, and you know that I'm big on breaking it down. I talked about this before the break. The Clippers, there's no excuse for going down 0-2, 0-2, 0-2, right? But they did their best to dig it out. At the same time, you have to ask yourself, from the coaching staff and otherwise, why did you continue to have that happen? Was there a way you could have stopped it? In the Clippers case, I'm not sure that they could have because the Kawhi injury killed them. In the case of the Milwaukee Bucks,
Does anything remotely remind you of the Hawks series and the way they defended the high screen, high pick and roll last night with Booker and Paul? Because just like game one, in which they also didn't make many adjustments the rest of the series until it was almost too late and then got Holiday more involved and others in guarding Trae Young. Last night, Brooke Lopez was consistently in a switch thanks to a pick on the top of the key that put him on one of two, either Booker or Paul, and he was in trouble. Mike Budenholzer, have you not watched film the entire series? Do you not know what other teams, because if you have or haven't, other teams have. You don't think the Suns watched this and said to themselves, either they go small and start Portis and Giannis together and leave Lopez out of the equation altogether. Otherwise, there's no way they'd be dumb enough to do the same thing they did to Atlanta and let Brooke Lopez get caught on an island on the top of the key. And yet they not only did it to start the game, they did it the entire game.
And I don't know if it was a situation where they're like, well, we do know what's happening, but we're not putting that much of a priority. Maybe Giannis was more of a priority, but you got to recognize that. And the high pick and roll always has been a situation defensively for the Bucks, and they need to address that. So I do think it's going to be a kind of a bold move, though, to fire Mike after making an NBA Finals appearance. But
stranger,
I guess
we've seen
worse. Yeah. I was just going to say. We've seen worse, so it's not going to be completely crazy if he gets fired after making an NBA Finals appearance, but it certainly hurts. I mean, it helps his case in terms of staying there if he wants to stay there, and I think he'll get another gig, right? Even if he does get fired, he'll probably get another gig.
I don't know, man. I mean, I would think so.
Maybe not as a head coach to start.
Right.
But he'll get a gig.
That's possible. But I think that, again, as this always comes down to, Nick, it's the superstars, too. If somehow, some way, this is the trend and it continues and the Suns win the title and more people start recognizing the fact they didn't make any adjustments. I mean, he said in the locker room after the game, pick your heads up, guys. You know, it'll be okay. We'll watch some film. We'll figure out what we need to do better and we'll be better for game two. Will you? Because I don't see you making any adjustments at all.
Well, I mean, he has to be watching the film and recognizing that. Is it a situation where he kind of knows what's happening, but his team simply can't execute it, or they're not trying, or are you just not recognizing the issue at all? Because there's no way you're watching film and not seeing that.
Let me just put it this way. Chris Paul's a good player. He's not what he used to be, but he's still a good player. There's no way Chris Paul at an NBA Finals game gets every single shot and point that he got last night without the porously bad defense of the Milwaukee Bucks and no adjustments. Because he got a matchup where a point guard should every single time be able to expose and obliterate a center when trying to stop you. He could get to whatever spot he wanted to get. He could get whatever shot he wanted to get. He could affect the defense by drawing more people to him because of the fact that Lopez was backpedaling and stuck. That's something that only happens with Chris Paul blowing out numbers like that unless you're playing against a completely incompetent coaching staff that didn't make any changes. Because we've seen this with Harden. Chris Paul himself knows that the easiest way to slow that Phoenix offense down is on the high screen, squeeze it on both sides. That means Booker gets caught in traffic, Paul can't get around the corner and get Lopez one-on-one, and then your other wing defenders can rotate, they can move, and they can stop penetration. That's the way you defend it early on. Then you can throw other looks at them. But in the fact that they didn't do anything is so disappointing for a team that has too much talent. You've got a Bobby Portis, if you want to go small. You've got a Connaughton who could play multiple different positions. You've got a multitude of other guards that could come in to help you, even if it means if you're in foul trouble, pushing up on Chris Paul, bothering him more, hounding him more, you know, not fighting over the screen, but sticking right to him more. They did nothing.
Chris Paul said it. He's like, you can say whatever you want about our team. The one thing that we will not do is going to a game, a playoff game, and not be prepared. That's the one thing that he knew going into every single game, not just in the playoffs, but in the regular season, that this team will be prepared. They might lose the game, but they're prepared. They're studied up. They've watched film. They know what they need to do. It's just a matter of execution. I don't know how studied up this Bucks team is, but you would think they have the quality, you know, trainers and coaches and video guys to show them. And then, look, at the end of the day, it's not like there's not enough talent on the Bucks. They're just not executing. So,
but you know what, Nick? The other thing is, too, it's not even just who's on your staff. At this point, if you have friends, and Budenholzer worked for Popovich, and he's got a lot of friends that he worked with in San Antonio that are across the league.
Even if it doesn't sound like he worked for Popovich, by the way.
Oh, he doesn't, right. It's so true when you hear him talk.
It's like, this is not a Popovich disciple. Even like a disciple.
James Borrego down in Charlotte, okay? Or whoever the hell else that he worked, Ime Udoka, the new coach of the Celtics.
Yeah.
I guarantee you between games, off day to day, he's getting texts from the guys that he was closest to when he worked in other situations going, why are you not doubling or covering both sides of the high screen? Why are you leaving Lopez out there on an island instead of either going small or making adjustments? Why? I guarantee you coaches are trying to help their buddy that's a coach in this situation. If he's just naive enough or stubborn enough to not listen, he's an idiot.
It may be a communication thing. Because the way, I'm not saying he's a bad communicator. He's just, maybe he doesn't have the for the intensity to relay what he's actually trying to tell these players so they can actually execute better.
But I think in terms of whether he comes back or not, Nick, it's going to come down to Giannis and Middleton. And
he made it to the NBA Finals, and his best player's knee got hyperextended bad.
All fine points. But if Giannis is the guy driving the bus going, I like him a lot as a person. Look, Giannis liked Jason Kidd a lot as a person. But he knew from an organizational standpoint to take this team to the next level, Kidd wasn't the guy. At a certain point now with a bigger stage, with higher stakes, if you realize, hey, he got us pretty far, but at the same time, he had the best record in the league the last 2 years, too. And look at where they've gotten. No rings. And if this is the thing that you get into these high-leverage situations as a coach and you don't adjust, hey, good coach. Hey, thanks for what you've done. We got to get someone else if we're going to go another level.
It's possible. And look, if the star, if Giannis really does say that, we know how that's going to end. We know how that's going to end. If Giannis actually says, you know what, I'm kind of done with this particular coach, goodbye, Mike, whether he made it to the finals or not. I just didn't know Giannis would have that in him. He might. He might tell him, look, bro, I am done with you.
Well, I remember how he handled the Jay Kidd situation.
But Jay Kidd, he looked like such an amateur his first year, dude. Like he was. He looked so bad. I'm not mad at Giannis for saying what he said about Jay Kidd if that was the case.
No, but the bigger problem, Nick, and a lot of guys, he learned this from coaches he played for, but Jason Kidd was a mind game guy. He liked to play too over the top tough love with guys. He used the media to get messages out there to take digs at players. And the players at a certain point get tired of it going, I'm making more money than you and I'm here long term. I ain't dealing with you. And that's what cost him. So if your franchise player speaks, hey, Nick, look no further than down on Polk Street. Harden ran that franchise for 8 years. If he says jump, you say, how high? I'm ready. Let's get rid of the coach. We'll see how it plays out. It's only game one.
He's never said that about a staffer, right? James Harden. Like, get rid of this guy. Get rid of this this little trainer over here. Or this front office dude.
He hated my cameraman for quite a few years, but he never made it that vocal. So no,
really?
I don't think so. Oh, yeah.
Why did he hate the cameraman so much?
He was kind of annoying. He was persistent.
The cameraman was annoying?
Yeah. Didn't take no for an answer a lot.
Oh, I think I know who you're talking about, actually. I know who you're talking about. I know exactly who you're talking
about.
Probably. Yeah.
All right. That's the hour of the show that we do to start things, but we've got two more to go, including the middle and the end hour. So, therefore, 2 hours for you to join the program. 713-780-3776 for calls and texts. Otherwise, it's Twitch. It's Twitter. It's you, me, and Nick. It's the Press Box, ESPN.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.